Blog Talk Radio.
And you are listening live to the Gist of Freedom radio show. Tonight, we have a very special guest that I'm very, very excited about talking to and picking her brain, because she's talking about a subject that affects us all, food, our consumption of food, and the philosophy of eating to live as opposed to living to eat. I'm talking about none other than Miss Rebecca Johnson. Miss Johnson, are you on the line with us?
Thanks for having me, Jamal.
Certainly, certainly. How are you feeling this evening?
I'm doing well, thanks. And you?
Yeah, if I was doing any better, it might be illegal. Where are you tuning in from this evening?
From Harlem, New York City.
Awesome, awesome. I've yet to visit. However, that's definitely a place on my list of places to go.
I am.
Yes, I'm here.
You were here yesterday.
Awesome, awesome. What sort of, did you go to where you was at?
Oh, it was $30,000 a plate, no.
No, yeah. I can understand why. I wonder what they had on that plate for $30,000, but we'll probably never know. But we are going to talk about...
A lot of promises, Jamal, a lot of promises.
That's it. But we're not going to talk about that this evening. We're going to talk about the substance that should be on all of our plates as we go forth each day. But first and foremost, before we get into those heavy-hitting questions, let's start off with a light one. Please let us know... In the listening audience, who is Miss Rebecca Johnson?
Oh, thank you. Well, just want to welcome your listeners tonight. Thank you for being on. We really appreciate it, and thanks for taking the time to give me a call. I am a health advocate. I also am an event planner in New York City. I have my own company, which is called Celebrevents, and a food company, which is called Real Snacks. So my focus is really coaching people on eating healthy. I do health food events in the city and also a lot of fundraising.
Awesome. That is awesome. Now, tell us about Real Snacks and the coaching people on how to eat healthy. Where did that come from? What in your existence, in your path and your journey, if you will, led you down in this direction?
Well, it's a long one. I'll try to make it really short. When I was a young person, I had an epiphany about food and it was primarily at that time about eating meat. And so I decided to stop eating meat, and you can imagine what that did to my household at a very young age. And my family was very resistant, and they used to try to hide meat and food, and I would discover it. But my mom came around, and she's actually 85 years old and still alive and driving her own car and doing really well. And I think I had a lot to do with that by changing the light meat. So that started way back then, and then I had some friends that influenced me in Philadelphia, and we actually knew some folks who used to eat raw food. And so we used to dine with them, and I used to have things like raw chocolate and live lasagna and things that were delicious but were not cooked. There's a whole theory about not heating food over 116 degrees because it removes the enzymes, which are what are life-producing. And so I got an education at a very young age. And so I continued on being a vegetarian. Unfortunately, I was a vegetarian, but I wasn't eating healthy. You know, you can be a vegetarian and still have a really poor diet. And one of the reasons is because you have a lot of people that, you know, when you eat vegetables, you don't necessarily fill up because they're water-soluble. That's what makes them so good, is that they are ingested into your body and into your cells really quickly. But if you don't understand the balance of balancing protein and vegetable and grains, then what you'll do is you'll do a lot of snacking. You find a lot of vegetarians eat a lot of bread and other things, but you're not necessarily getting a nutritious diet. So that's kind of what happened to me, Jamal. And I ended up being sick, and I ended up having a couple of surgeries, and on the fourth one, I made up my mind that I needed to make a radical shift. And at the time, I actually wasn't a vegetarian. I had started eating meat again because of the environment that I was in, and it was easier for me to eat chicken and beef, and I got really, really sick. So back in the year 2000, I went completely raw, which is live food, completely vegan for 3 months straight, and it completely turned my health around. I lost 25 pounds, the condition was gone, and I never had to have surgery again. So I kind of made a commitment that this was a way of life for me, but what happened was I started working for Procter & Gamble, teaching girls in New York City schools about puberty health and hygiene. And the presentation that I used to give in the various schools was a very well-rounded one. But I used to spend most of my time talking about food. And that was because these students would come to school in the morning and they would be drinking drinks that you just didn't even know what they were. They were red and blue and various colors, and they were having pastry for breakfast, and they'd go out to lunch and do the same thing. And they were having a hard time concentrating. And so I started talking to them about food, and that's kind of really where it all got started.
That is an awesome, awesome story. So you're telling me that your food was your medicine. Is that the gist?
Yeah.
Is that a quick way to sum that up?
That would be good, Jamal.
Wow. That idea of being an unhealthy eating vegetarian may be a foreign one to someone. So to some people, a large portion of our listening audience, I'm sure. So I'm glad that you were able to break that down and make that make sense. It made sense to me. You know, some people think, well, meat is unhealthy, so eliminate meat and problem solved. But you enlightened us that we sometimes eat the wrong things or too much of the wrong things that are non-meat and can lead us to some problems as well.
Let me just say something about that.
Sure.
It's very, very short and very simple.
Take your time.
The reason is because we don't understand why we eat. The reason that we eat is because we need fuel for our body to keep it functioning at an optimal level. And so the body is consisting of minerals and many other chemical compounds that are actually found in food. But we have to understand that there's a science to food in order to eat properly.
That sounds pretty basic to me. I think even my 8-year-old who's listening in, I think that he can understand that. We eat because we need to refuel our bodies. That's awesome. I understand that sometimes children are able to grasp ideas and concepts a lot quicker than adults do. So tell me about some of the challenges and that you deal with on a day-to-day basis trying to coach adults on how to eat healthy.
Well, that's a funny question because recently I made a mind shift myself because I have been coaching adults and cooking for adults who, you know, want to become healthier. They have conditions, and most of the conditions are related to what they're eating, high blood pressure, obesity, and various other conditions that are chronic. And so I probably would have to say that the number one challenge to coaching adults is habit. That for a consistent time, they've been eating a certain type of food, and it's very difficult to give it up. With children, it's very different. But with adults, it's just habitual. It's just that I like this, and this is what I've been eating, and this is what I know how to eat. And we kind of get into a pattern. I do that myself, and I force myself because I have educated myself about food, that I force myself to not eat the same foods all the time. If you do research, you can find that there are so many different methodologies about eating healthy. Like eating color, for instance, making sure that you have a colorful plate. The USDA is doing that now. If you go to their website, you'll see that on the food pyramid, they actually talk about color, eating red foods and orange foods, because when you do the study and breakdown of that, that red in a bell pepper is actually something called lycopene, which is known to prevent cancer. So the colors are there for a reason because they relate to certain things that the body needs. But working with adults is just a challenge based on habit and what they're used to and kind of trying to shake that up a little bit.
Awesome, awesome. Yes, a few two weeks ago to be exact, we had on a gentleman by the name of Dr. Relaford, who has a fantastic book that deals just with that. Talks about the five colors that our plate should look like a rainbow. And he talks about, you know, again, breaking it down simply so that even a child can understand it. You know, we don't necessarily think about the pyramids. I need, you know, two cups of this and that, what have you. He just says by the end of the day, look back on your meals and say, was my plate like a rainbow? Did I have my red and my greens and yellows and purples and what have you? And if you can say yes, then, you know, you're headed in the right direction.
Yeah, and he's doing some great things. I actually listened to your show, and I did a little research on him. I really like what he's doing in the community.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Now, we've heard about some of the successes that you've had transforming people's diets and what have you. What are some of the challenges that you have with going on this journey of education on a subject that people are very touchy about? People are very touchy about their meals, as I'm sure you would attest to. And so you're going in and telling people, hey, you need to radically change, in some instances, the way that you're going about things. What are some of the challenges that you deal with in doing so?
Well, just let me share a little bit about the statistics and how serious this is, Jamal. Mm-hmm. The CDC shows that 65% of U.S. adults are overweight or obese, which means one in three. And it's up since 1994. The one of the really just startling statistics is that children and adolescents between 16 and 19 are 16% overweight, and it's
16%.
Tripled. Wow. And it's tripled since 1980, tripled. And so even in New York, where I am, the numbers are staggering. We have one in six adults that are obese, and 30% of New York State adolescents are overweight. So this is a real health problem because this overweight and obesity is causing type 2 diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure, strokes, and certain kinds of cancers. So that's the real challenge for all of us. And that's why this is such an issue, is that it's causing sickness and potentially people are dying because of what they're eating. Now, at the same time, there's poverty, and we're finding with unemployment and many of the things that, you know, we're experiencing in our country economically, you have people that are hungry, but at the same time, they're obese. How is that? And so the number one challenge that I have is helping people make the connection, because unfortunately, our medical profession doesn't really do that. I mean, it's a perfect example. I'm a perfect example of that.
Let me jump in right here and ask a question before we move on. I think it's very pertinent. Why, in your opinion, is it such an easy thing for us to go to a, I won't name any names, a fast food place and supersize for maybe 39 cents more or what have you, as opposed to grabbing some fresh fruit or fresh vegetable in our neighborhoods, our urban jungle, if you will?
Well, I think that there are, you know, a lot of reasons. I mean, one of them is definitely, you know, that we live in a convenience society. It's just what can we get quickly and easily. And I think that, you know, overall, we have lost our connection with food and where it comes from and who grows it and all of that. And then also, you know, it's marketing. You know, one of the challenges with the place that you're probably talking about is marketing. It's toys and packaging. And so that's what's driving a lot of our food is the packaging. For instance, just today it was reported that the FDA is in discussions about making a recommendation about removing food dyes from kids' snacks. Because food dyes are, they're linking food dyes to ADHD.
ADHD, yes. I've read some of that research lately, recently.
The average child consumes approximately 121 milligrams of artificial dyes a day. This is twice as much dye in food as it was in 1970. Twice as much. Well, the only thing that's driving that is economics. That the food companies are, if you look in on Wall Street, and you look at the statistics of what companies have not really been hurt by the recent, you know, problems in our economic situation is food companies. It's food companies.
Food companies. Right. That leads me to another great question. What about food co-ops and urban gardening? Have you done that? What's your experience, and what recommendations do you have?
Well, I'm a member of the Park Slope Food Co-op, which is...
Say that name again, please.
Park Slope Food Co-op.
Okay, awesome.
And they're nationally known for the system that they've created. There are various food co-ops. They're not the only one. And there's, you know, one in New York City, in Manhattan, which is in the West Village. But I'm a member there because they really do supply their customers with pretty much everything that you can get in a Whole Foods. But the co-op philosophy is that you work every 4 weeks and you help in the sense that they can keep the food costs down through your labor. So it's a very egalitarian environment, but everything there is labeled. So you know whether your food is organic or not. Let's say if they have something like I don't know, kale. And this is not true. I'm just giving that as an example. And they weren't able to get the same supplier that week from a particular farm. They will put a sign there and let you know where your food comes from. And that's one of our problems, is we have no relationship with our food. It's sent to us in a package. The package has pretty coloring on it. We don't know that it has blue number one and yellow number five, which is, you know, known to cause problems or cancer. And so we don't have a relationship. So I go all the way out to Brooklyn from Manhattan to purchase my food.
Wow, well, give us an idea about how long that trip is, round trip for you.
Oh, it's a few hours.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, but it's worth it to me.
Right.
And it's worth it to me to support that, and I pray for the day that there's a food co-op in Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have community-supported agriculture, and anybody can buy shares, and the shares can either be delivered or they're delivered to a central place, and you pick them up. One of the great things that's happening in New York City related to CSAs is that many food shelter programs are now having community-supported agriculture, where they're not just giving out packaged goods anymore, but they're also giving fresh fruits and vegetables. Which is a great thing, because one of the things that you hear about eating this way many times is that it's too expensive.
It's too expensive, certainly.
Yes,
certainly.
And it's true. People are using food stamps to buy food. More families are actually becoming eligible for food programs. And so they do need to have something that's more economical. Not everybody can go to the Park Slope Food Co-op and buy food. And so part of it is we all need to support organic growing. The reason that it's as expensive as it is because fewer people are doing it. If more of us would eat that way, the costs would go down.
More of a demand, yeah, and that whole thing would shift a little bit. I think I heard our president's wife recently mentioned something along those lines. What is your take on Ms. Michelle Obama and the things she is professing with regards to health and fitness and all that good stuff for our youth in particular?
Well, come on. I mean, we all have to just cheer for Michelle Obama, right? That one of her first moves was to plant a garden in the White House lawn.
At the White House.
That was a huge statement. And so now she seasonally brings children there, and they get to plant food that other children will eat during, you know, events that they have. And that's such an educational tool. Kids get so excited when you show them raw food, meaning food that, you know, is in its natural form that's been picked and, you know, has not been processed, and you explain to them how it's grown and why it's good for their bodies. So what Michelle Obama is doing, the president's wife, you know, the first lady, is just incredible. She's got a website that's called letsmove.org, which is not just about eating, but it's about exercise as well, getting kids moving, and getting obesity down in our children.
That is beautiful. I have a question here that was just sent across the wire from Miss Leslie. She wants to know, have you thought about doing the same thing that you're doing there in Harlem in the city of Philadelphia?
Well, yes, I have. And the reason why is because my sister is opening her school next year. She has two charter schools. And it's called the Global Leadership Academy.
Hmm.
And they're presently in two sites, and they're going to come to one site. And so she is planning her food program right now. And so what I am doing is working with her to develop her lunchroom and her food program that from the ground up will include nutritional foods and healthy foods.
That is awesome. That is awesome. And what about a garden? What about a garden in Philadelphia? I'm sure the people there could benefit from that. Have any take on that?
Well, we have talked about that because there are a couple of models. Of course, you know about the Promise Academy, Jeffrey Canada. They
yes.
have an incredible food program there. They serve their children the food that, you know, is just, to me, all children deserve to eat healthy and harmless food, and Jeffrey Canada is doing that. There are several schools in the city that have that model of having either a rooftop garden or a garden alongside the school where kids are taught to plant and compost. And so, yes, we're definitely talking about that.
That's awesome. I am proud to announce that I, as of a week and a half ago, have started my own garden here in my backyard here in sunny Southern California. And so it's something I'm very happy and excited about. Myself, along with my girlfriend, her brothers, and my son, shall begin growing our own stuff. Do you have any tips or tricks? Or just general ideas that that we should follow?
Well, I'm really jealous. That's the first thing that I mean. But I really do believe that, you know, we in the city is a huge turnaround happening in New York City where there are rooftop gardens and there is more gardening happening. New York City, Nourishing New York City Kitchen is one organization that's doing a lot of gardening in local areas like Harlem. So that is something that I actually have just begun to participate in. But last week I had a guest on and he actually started a CSA in upstate New York. And he shared all about gardening, and his name is David Hamilton, and he is the head farmer at Sisters Hill Farm. And one of the things that I like that David was explaining about food gardens is that it's important to grow many different types of vegetables, because it makes the soil very diverse and rich.
That's awesome. I'm a student of history, so I can clearly recall our dear brother down there. His name escapes me. I have Booker T. Washington in mind, but that's not it. George Washington Carver talked about that, and his ideas on that saved the South. I'd like to know about which foods are presently in season. What should I be planting at this moment? And if you can answer that real quickly as we begin to wrap up with any sites or books and things that you would like to recommend for us. But again, what foods are in season, foods and fruits are in season that we should be looking to plant? And again, if you could tell us about how we can get in contact with you and the great things that you're doing and any other books and sites that you would like for us to check out.
Well, foods in season a lot of times relate to, where you live.
Mm-hmm.
So, in California is going to be different than in New York, for instance.
Really? I didn't know that. Well, I've always heard that statement, but I thought it was just by country. You know, obviously something in Ecuador isn't in season in the United States, but I didn't know it even varied amongst geography. Wow, I'm learning a lot here.
Well, there's a website that's called sustainabletable.org.
Sustainable Table, okay.
Yeah. And you actually put in your state and you put in your season. So, for instance, right now, we're in, and it goes by early and late. So we're in early April, and so I put in New York, right? And then it gives me a list of finding farmers. So, for instance, in New York, early April is carrots, onions, potatoes, and turnips. Early May is asparagus and radishes.
Awesome.
And then June, we get into strawberries and tomatoes.
Give us that site one more time and give us a closing thought as we must go here in about 60 seconds.
Okay. It's sustainabletable.org.
Thank you.
Okay. And so my closing thoughts are, I mean, first of all, really just thank you. Thank you for...
No, thank you. Thank you.
for the time, and thank you to your guests who listen. But, you know, today there was some news about the U.S. House of Representatives passing a budget that would actually cut food support to families, women, and children, the WIC program. And I was actually talking to Leslie about that earlier, and I read about it. And so, you know, the main thing is that we just have to make the relationship between the urban areas and food more of an issue, that we know where our food is coming from, that we're involved in the growing of the food, that we don't just leave it up to the government, and we don't just leave it up to corporations and businesses and companies, but that we ourselves get more involved in where our food comes from, being educated about what it is and what it does and how it can heal our bodies, and then teach that to our children.
That is awesome. That is awesome. Last point.
Yes.
That's right. Last point here. Again, your website where we can find out more information.
Oh, you can contact me. Actually, let me just give my email address.
Okay, that'll work.
Because I have some material I can send if anyone's interested.
Okay.
It's Rebecca-Johnson. Actually, you could send it to Celebrevent, sorry, CEBREVENTS. That's celebrevents@verizon.net.
One more time, please.
Celebrevents, CELEBREVENTS@verizon.net.
Thank
I also
you, thank
have
you.
A blog, which is called Food Health Life, and that's foodhealthlife.wordpress.com.
Fantastic. Well, thank you once again, Ms. Johnson. This has been an enlightening event, an enlightening topic, and I, for one, will definitely be reaching out to you for some tips and tricks on how to make my plate more colorful and how to get some good stuff in my body so that I, too, can eat to live as opposed to live to eat. Thank you very much, Ms. Johnson.
Thank you. Bye,
all right.
All.
All right. Okay. Signing off. Thanks to you all for listening again to a fabulous presentation provided to you by the Gist of Freedom. Bye now.